It's the International Women in Film Podcast with your host, Michelle the Trainer. MTT is Michelle the Trainer.
Aloha and welcome to episode 17 of the International Women in Film Podcast. Today's very special guest star is Renee O'Connor, a successful actress and filmmaker, best known for her role as Gabrielle on Xena, Warrior Princess. She brings her unparalleled passion to each and every project. Renee made a name for herself when she resided in Auckland, New Zealand, playing the role of Gabrielle, Xena's trusted sidekick, on the popular series from 1996 till 2001. The scene-stealing role created a huge worldwide fan base, one still active in countless websites dedicated to the actress and this signature series. Renee then moved on to launch her own film production company, Rock Productions, R-O-C. Her first independent production under the company is the romantic comedy Diamonds and Guns, which was released on DVD in January 2008. She's starred in several independent films, including Boogeyman 2 opposite Tobin Bell, the Sci-Fi Channel's Monster Arc opposite Tim DeKay, and Alien Apocalypse opposite Bruce Campbell, one of the highest-rated original movies in cable network's history. She starred in the action webisode series ARK, A-R-K, from Judah Sachs, executive producers of 90210 and Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and the anticipated faith-based feature film Beyond the Farthest Star, due for release in 2016 from Pathlight Entertainment. Prior to her breakout role, Renee lived in Texas, and began her professional film career at the age of 17, starring in the serial Teen Angel and a regular feature on the Disney Channel's The Mickey Mouse Club. Other credits include the Disney films The Adventures of Huck Finn with Elijah Wood and television movies such as Follow the River with Ellen Burstyn, Danielle Steele's Changes with Cheryl Ladd, and James Garner's second Rock Files reunion movie. Renee's talent extends well beyond the big screen or the small screen. An acclaimed stunt woman, Renee is proficient in several forms of martial arts and the use of martial arts weapons, which includes the nunchuck, bow staff, and the sai. She is a certified teacher of emotional awareness for the gifted community by the Rockamora School, and Renee has been an annual nominee for Women Making a Difference Award by the Los Angeles Business Journal since 2010. Currently, as an independent, Renee writes, directs, produces award-winning short films, bridging social awareness with the entertainment industry, and she's in post-production in the feature film Watch the Sky, a science fiction family film, due for release in 2017. I love talking to Renee and hearing all about her martial arts background. It was such a great experience to connect with her. I hope you totally enjoy the interview as much as we enjoyed making it, and I want you to have a totally adventurous and awesome day. Thank you. Welcome to the International Women in Film Podcast. Today's very special guest star is Renee O'Connor.
Hello.
Hello. So, we're not going to talk about it much because you're going to give me the links for the show notes about your long career with the Xena show, Xena the Warrior Princess. Is there anything you'd like to say about that?
Very, very excited. One of my dearest sister friends, soulmates, is Lucy Lawless, who plays Xena. And another dear friend is Adrienne Wilkinson, who played Eve, which was her daughter. Two people I just absolutely love and adore. We have an incredible writing staff that we worked with, and it's iconic. It was an opportunity, that one that you would never forget.
It was an amazing show and went for a very long time. So I was just wondering, and again, we're going to give the links in the show notes on internationalwomeninfilm.com, but just about the martial arts background, it's so rare for me to be able to commune with a female martial artist. How did you get started in martial arts?
My background is in dance. So I started off throughout high school in jazz classes and modern classes. And then when Xena came around to me, I always looked at every martial arts sequence as a dance sequence of choreography. It's a very fluid piece, and you're just looking at the spatial area around you. So that came immediately. The hard part was just having these amazing men flying all around me, and I was trying not to hurt anybody. I was always kind of, you know, wanting to know how they did things and wanting them to break it down for me, or wanting to know, you know, which weapon, what its name was and where it came from. So I was always asking lots of questions, and I kept putting the guys in their heads. And so our stuntmen were, they were just so adorable. They would talk to me about everything at the same time. They had to pull away and then go do a backflip or something and try not to get hurt. So I was such a distraction.
And there was a lot of weapons, you know, there was a lot of sticks and staffs. It was all just very visually very cool.
Yeah, I actually learned every single weapon from one of our stuntmen on our show. So when we first started in season one, my character was more of the damsel in distress. She was the one that was always getting into trouble, and Cena had to save her. And on the sideline, there I was again, just asking the stuntmen all the questions and trying to learn everything I could because I was interested like you. And at the end of the first season, they gave my character one big bow staff. So it was probably twice the size as I am because I'm still very small. And I probably spent one afternoon learning the basics that I would need for the show. And I just practiced every chance I had while I wasn't filming. I think I was just really interested, very interested in martial arts and weaponry. I still have a passion for it. I still have my staff at home. I have my practice staff at home.
How heavy was your bow?
The actual bow for filming wasn't terribly heavy because they would use a very hard rubber that was solid enough that it wouldn't bend when I was hitting someone. And
yeah, because they looked massive from the audience side. You know, it just looked like...
Well, we had two different versions. We had the one that was made of wood that was our hero stick, you know. And so that was the one that was in all the shots and the close-ups and whenever we were having a dialogue scene. Whenever we were fighting, they would switch it out for the hard rubber. And again, it was hard enough that it would make a hit. I mean, I fortunately do remember making some contact, unfortunately for my friend's impact, hitting them. Aww. But you know, it's part of being on a stunt show. Everybody gets hurt at some point. But yeah, there was that. And then afterwards, there was a time with my character where she didn't fight at all. So she went through a period of peace, which is beautiful, and I love and appreciate it. However, I still want to play with the toys, you know. And then at the very end of the entire show, they were thinking about bringing the staff back, and I had asked our executive producer if I could try a different weapon. I asked for a sword. And he just, you know, he just laughs at me. And he said, well, let's do something that would be more unique for Gabrielle. And along came these little mini swords that are called Sais. And that's the last weapon that I used.
That's S-A-I, right? Yeah.
Yes. And I still have those. So, you know, one of your questions earlier was about the training. You know, whenever I would train on any sort of weapon, I always used a heavier piece to develop fluidity and speed. So then when I was on set in our actual fights and they gave me a different prop, then I could actually move around, and it made it look like I was better than I really am.
Well, it sure came across very artsy and very convincing. And again, it's just, you know, very cool. Like the, you know, when Disney did Brave, it's very empowering, I think, you know, to see a female doing a martial art or fighting art. So that was pretty far out. The last season was which year?
The last year that we worked on our show was the year 2001.
Wow.
So we finished halfway through the year. And at the time, I was almost 4 months pregnant with my son. So I still did all the fights. I did everything I could. I actually felt much more limber than I ever had before. Yet at the same time, it gave me a stillness and a sense of strength that I had never experienced before in the entire time of working on the show. It was just the quality of knowing that I was protecting something that was much bigger than my own life. And I wish I had known that early on at the beginning of our run of Xena, but I'm so appreciating that I had that at all towards the end.
That's awesome. And then you moved into a lot of independent work, right?
I did. One of the many gifts of working on Xena, especially in a different country because we worked in New Zealand, was the fact that I could treat the entire television show as a film school. We shot on 35 millimeter. We had incredible cinematographers, costumers, stunt choreographers.
And you lived there, right? You lived in Auckland?
I lived there. So I just immersed myself into this environment as if I was the student. And what became of that, you know, this amazing opportunity to learn script writing, story arcs, character development, and even more importantly for me, how to direct. I have this incredible passion for directing actors, and I was able to direct a few episodes while I was on the show. And, you know, these are like Hong Kong style fight sequences and character comedic moments, all sorts of wide variety of
complicated,
but interesting.
Totally.
And so those opportunities imprinted this passion in me to be in the independent world, because the beauty of Xena is that it was so grand and we were a part of a studio and we were basically a giant machine that, you know, each specific piece relied on the other one to perform perfectly. I was curious about the independent world where I could play different roles, whether it was the producer, the director, the writer, the actor, at different times and interchange them as I had been the student over on Xena. And I was also curious about the atmosphere of not working under a studio to see how to cultivate these new artists, to see what fresh perspectives they might have. And that's why I went down the independent path.
And is that when you started ROC Productions?
I started ROC right after I finished Xena, because I knew that I wanted to start a production company. I really wasn't clear on if I wanted to be a producer, a writer, director, or actor.
So now you're all of them.
Yes, exactly. I just sort of move around depending on where the need is, or also what role that it calls to me, with depending on the project.
That's far out. That's very cool to be able to have the background to do that and be that.
Yeah. You know, I always talk about Rob Tappert, who was our executive producer on Xena, as being a champion for the new talent in New Zealand. I was one of those byproducts. I mean, I was this kid that wanted to learn everything I could and asked for opportunities, and he gave them to me. And he instilled this real pure piece of my heart where I want to help other filmmakers have what I had on Xena. I want them to have this opportunity where they can step into something that is a working atmosphere and lift them up and let them fly. I absolutely love that. So there's that also kind of keeps me going as a producer of Rock Productions.
That's awesome. And that's ROC Productions for people that are listening. R, capital O, capital C. So with that company, you did Diamonds and Guns, right?
Yes.
Romantic comedy?
Yes, it was a romantic comedy. It was the very first step into producing. All the credit for that film goes to Don Higginbotham and Helena Bevan, who were the two people who pulled it together. The work that I did specifically on that as a producer was more of the post-production process. It was the one aspect that I had never experienced on Xena, so I was really curious about how you take a film that had already finished principal photography and then you find its release. So I focused on those aspects, and yeah.
That's interesting. Dawn is in our episode 16 of the International Women in Film podcast, and she loves working with you. She spoke very highly of you and mentioned you in several projects. But it's interesting to me as well, looking at ROC Productions, which is, of course, different from Dawn's production company, because there's so much intermingling here. So you've got productions that you did here. When did you come across the 2011 film Infinity, which is where I ran into sort of everybody?
Oh, yes.
The Infinity film by Randy Crowder.
Yes. Well, my background with Randy Crowder and Jeanette O'Connor came from a short film that I wrote and directed called Words Unspoken. I was looking for a man to play the father in our short film, and the actor that I had assumed would be playing the role stepped out because he was expecting a baby. And to my benefit, I found Randy Crowder through families and our friends. And yeah, he's an amazing actor. Amazing actor. He really just brought the entire script to life. And from that moment on, I had this feeling that I just wanted to take any opportunity I had in the future to work with him again. I had no idea what it would be. I just knew I wanted to be around that creative energy. Then came Infinity a couple years later, and he brought this script over to Jed, Sura, and myself, kind of passed it around to see what we thought of it. And I just asked him if I could play the role. I said, you know, I'm not even sure if you have anyone in mind for this, but I absolutely love this part and I would love to play it. To be honest, it terrifies
me. Such a different role for you.
Yeah,
I was such a changed person after seeing that film.
Well, it is. It's funny because it's one of the most horrific projects I've ever been on, in that it really delves into psychological horror, coming off of watching people experience the aftermath of Iraq and Afghanistan and PTSD. I just absolutely felt this short film had to be made, and people had to see it. They had to see the impact of what PTSD has on people. And it could be, I know most people haven't seen the film, but it is online. It's on Vimeo. You need to watch it. There isn't any blood. There is no gratuitous violence. However, it is disturbing. And it comes from a very real place of a trauma that people do go through.
Yeah, PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder. And I mentioned to you before that with the more scary events that the world has, the more PTSD we will have as a globe. And it's certainly not something to be ignored. And this was really some fierce storytelling, very poignant for a short film. It was very interesting. I went with them to Raleigh Studios. I think you're in Cannes with Dawn when I was with Randy and Jeanette O'Connor at
yes.
Raleigh. Yeah, and yeah, nothing fancy, nothing, not big special effects, not no muss, no fuss. It was storytelling, but amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's all Randy. I think you're right.
You
though.
Went
I mean...
deep with that. You went really deep with that. It must have been very different for you to rehearse and prepare for a role like that compared to, you know, the fighting and the smiling and the love things going on like in Xena. It must have been a completely different world for you.
Yeah, it was on the other side of the PTSD for in a role. One of the previous projects I had also worked on was a short film called One Week in a Month, where I played a soldier who had come back from Iraq, and she suffered from PTSD. So I was already well aware of the symptoms and the effects on a family. This was my opportunity to play the other side of it, to be the victim of it. And you know, what I think is just so powerful are that the clues are all right there in front of us. It's just, we don't know how to pick them up. We don't know how to put the whole picture together, especially when we're really close to people. So I think that that's something that is, it makes it worth watching. Even if you don't want to see a story that is sad, it's definitely worth watching because it just might be a key to something you need to see in your life.
And the Vimeo links, I did a specific post about the film Infinity. I speak about Randy and Jeanette and Renee and Dawn, who are all involved in the project. There are the links to Vimeo so that people are able to see it on Vimeo. And it also gives the audience quotes and the director's note, which I thought was very interesting, just to see different people's perspectives on the film. Because, again, I just keep saying over and over and over, it's fierce storytelling, because I don't want to give it any more than that away. Because it's short and, you know, I think people should see it. And I do like that in Randy's director's notes, he brings up that he wanted people to be able to ask questions about it, you know, to be able to ask the what if. And that was in his director's notes. And I think it's meaningful for people to be able to wonder and ask what if. And maybe that's why we don't see these things coming, because we're not used to these patterns.
Yeah.
You know?
It's what we don't want to see as well. No, I think that's wonderful. I really hope people will watch it. And you're right, I don't want to give anything away either.
Yeah, but there looks like there's other, maybe, I mean, what did you do in Boogeyman 2 or Monster Arc? Those are supposed to have monster names. What were those about?
Yeah, Boogeyman 2. That was more of, the classic horror film. It was a sequel to Boogeyman. And again, that came from my previous executive producer, Rob Tappert, and his business partner, Sam Raimi. So they have that franchise, Boogeyman. The first one, they actually filmed in New Zealand. So the second one, which I was in, was back in Los Angeles, where I was living at the time.
We should all go to New Zealand.
I do. Everyone needs to step on that piece of earth and heaven at some point in their life.
So were you there when they were like Lords of the Ringing in New Zealand at the same time?
Absolutely. We were right in the middle of filming our two shows. I say our two shows, Rob's two shows, which is Xena and Hercules. They started casting for Lord of the Rings, casting the actors as well as the crew. And it really, it hit us in an unusual way, because all of our best people moved off to either be a part of the film or shifted around in a way that kind of, you know, shook up the family a little bit. So we had to sort of brush ourselves off, stand back up, and look to see which person has been dying to take on a new position within the crew and allow them to step into it and shine. And that's what happened. So a lot of the people that might have started off as maybe a camera assistant on the first year down the line ended up being the cinematographer and were phenomenal. So it was very inspiring.
Yeah, it's become very famous. I did a travel post on another blog, liquidhike.com, about New Zealand, because even Air New Zealand is even promoting Lord of the Rings as being a destination now for that, to go and see the sights from the movie. And, you know, so it's interesting that we can see the Xena sights and we can see the Lord of the Rings sights. And
yeah, I don't know that they have our farm there anymore. We filmed most of our outdoor scenes in one farm on the North Island, and it used to be a lion park.
Wow.
By the time we were there, the lions were long gone, thankfully. We just roamed, you know, the weeds and the lakes and the streams daily.
That is so cool.
Boogeyman Tomb was filmed in Los Angeles at this old hospital in the middle of LA. It was an unusual piece because I had just given birth to my daughter. I mean, she was maybe just a couple months old. So I had, you know, I had to take her to set with me. The place is haunted, though. It was bizarre. The whole hospital is completely haunted.
Wow.
So I kept hearing these things before because everyone's just started trying to titillate each other with these stories. Yeah. So I was talking to the caterer one day for lunch, and he said, I'm not going back in that building. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I won't go back in there. Yesterday, I went to take some snacks for a lunch break up to them, and I spoke with the security guard who was here last night, and he said that he kept hearing these clicking sounds in the hallway through the night while nobody else was there. So he went to look, and it would start and stop and start and stop, and it sounded like this woman's heels on the wood floors. So he took off and called his mother, and his mother came and blessed the whole hospital that night. So here it is the next day, and the caterer
is fabulous.
It was amazing. I was like, this is, you know, this is great. And so then, of course, I'm so cheeky and so curious. I start roaming around looking at all the different rooms, and I found this one room. It was a basement, and literally it was full of files and files of patients' records. You could pull it out and you could dust it off and you could flip through, and it just had their entire history. It was crazy. So I didn't stay there as long as I, you know, as long as I probably would have if my hairs on my arms weren't standing straight up.
That is interesting. But you've done a lot of this sci-fi. I mean, that's kind of crossing the line out of sci-fi, but I guess it still could qualify. So Monster Arc, where was that?
Monster Arc was filmed in Sofia, Bulgaria.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was definitely crazy. Again, I took my daughter with me. These are the real life stories that you have that you remember movies by. And I remember the entire crew became so sick with this flu.
Do they do a lot of filming there?
They do quite a bit of filming.
Interesting.
In Eastern Europe. And it's, you know, it's one of the oldest and most beautiful cities. At the time, even though there's pockets that are really beautiful, most of the buildings looked like they had been hit by a bomb because the country was suffering so much poverty that they weren't able to refurbish these structures. Mm-hmm. So you had a little mix of both. And I think that's why the film companies would go there, because they could film pretty much anything from around the world in the middle of Eastern Europe. Tim Decay was on the project, and he's a real theatrically trained actor. So it was great fun for me to work with someone who, you know, just sort of carried it in a different fashion than the actors I'd been used to, which mostly came from television and film. He was great. And
did he do Alien Apocalypse too?
No, Bruce Campbell did Alien Apocalypse.
But they were both Sci-Fi Channel. I get it.
Yeah, they're both Sci-Fi Channel films. Bruce Campbell is one of my most favorite actors and human beings that I've ever had a chance to work with. He was on Xena with us for many years. So when Alien Apocalypse came up, it just seemed like a natural fit that I would go over and play opposite him.
That's cool.
But it was fun. You know, we're running around trying to dodge aliens and, you know, talking to bouncing tennis balls, pretending like it's an alien coming at us. You know, it's great fun.
That's cool. And then what is ARC, a webisode series?
Yes, ARC is a web series. It was meant to be a much larger series. I actually still don't know why it didn't happen. It came from these two amazing producers. You know, these are just two brilliant writers who have done the TV show 90210. They went on to do Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Another show out right now, it's called Night Shift. So they're very professional, amazing men, and they wanted to take a chance on doing a sci-fi show. So they went the web series route, and they hired a guy named Trey Stokes. And Trey Stokes came from the fanboy world, making videos around Star Wars. So he had this kind of eclectic crowd of people who absolutely adored him. Gabe found him, put us all together, and next thing I know, I'm walking around like I think I'm Sigourney Weaver on Aliens. You know, adding a little fight here, a little dome action, facade worlds there, and it was fun. I actually think it was very well done for a web series, and I do hope it becomes something one day. I don't know that it ever would, a project that would have some fruition, but I loved the concept.
Is it on the web? Can we see it?
It was one of the original series on Hulu when they were first starting to get some traction, and they were hiring these larger producers out of Hollywood, such as Gabe Sack and Jeff Judah. But Gabe, I just think they've moved on to other projects, so they never really picked up ARC.
And then Beyond the Farthest Star.
Yes. So I went from these monsters and aliens and spaceships and horror films to the faith-based entertainment world. I personally am just a very passionate person about spirituality, and this was an opportunity for me to go with a project that felt more dear to who I am as a person. And it's a beautiful film. It's about this family who are completely imploding on themselves and feel this great sense of isolation from each other, even though they're in the world of a church. In this case, they are church people that keep trying to find their home in another church. This is so beautifully written. It's one of the best overall scripts I have ever read. And I felt very honored to be a part of the film.
I think it's great that you've done such a variety of work. And I'm sure you're not done with your variety of work. Again, it just makes it very interesting. So that's going to release this year, 2016, Beyond the Farthest Star?
Yes, they are looking for a DVD release. It should be this year or the beginning of next year. They've already had a theatrical platform where they released the film into isolated theaters around America to give it an opportunity to be seen on a large screen, and now they're taking it straight to DVD. It's an amazing film. It's such a beautiful story, and what I really love about it is that it didn't feel like a faith-based story that was preaching to me. It felt like a faith-based story that took a human being with real problems and gave them the spotlight of showing what their life would be like if they made certain choices, and if then they forgave the other person, you know, to move on and to come back together. And that's what it's about. It's just these people, you know, dealing with human stories.
Oh, it's going to make us cry, I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool. So Watch the Sky. What is coming next for you? I've been dying to know about, this is your film, right? Watch the Sky?
Yes. Well, it is my film as a producer. Yeah. What, you know, as I mentioned before, I have a son and I have a daughter, and my fiance Jed Sura and myself have always been frustrated that there aren't very many movies out there that we can watch as a family. You know, we have to sort of put on our 3D goggles or just watch animation to watch anything that can be entertaining to all of us. So I've been looking for different stories, and one came on my doorstep, so to speak, which is a script called Watch the Sky. And the man who wrote it is also the director. So I thought the best place for me in this film is to produce it, to make sure that I could start from the very beginning and see it all the way through. And that's what I'm doing. So I have a very, very small role. It really was not about acting for me at all. It was, you know, just about how to make the best film that I could. But I am acting in it. My daughter's acting in it. My son, Miles, is acting in it. Jed's acting in it. It's
that's
a real family
wonderful
film. Yeah, we all have these roles. And many of our friends are in it as well through the company that Jeanette O'Connor, coming back to her, works with as a casting director. So we cast many of our friends through her group, the group that she and Randy run.
Scene Works.
Scene Workers.
Scenworkers.
Yeah, many of those people I have watched perform on several occasions through their showcases. And we just felt very blessed that we had such strong performances for every single role. It's a nice little ensemble piece.
Are you done filming it?
Oh, yes. We filmed last year in August, and we have been in post-production ever since. It is a sci-fi piece, so there are elements to it that take a little longer than just a normal story.
I cannot wait to see that. And it'll be distributed how or when can we see it?
Well, that is still left to be determined. We shall see.
And remember, audience, this is the end of July 2016, so we have to really look at this, because I will put in the show notes if this becomes available by the time we publish this particular episode 17 of the International Women in Film podcast. So with all of your experience, Renee, and all of these wonderful things that you've done and places you've been, I can't believe you went to Bulgaria. So as an indie filmmaker, actor, director, producer, what thoughts would you like to share? Like, you know, I'm all excited. I wrote my first like 30 words in Final Draft, Be Afraid, you know.
All right.
What do you have to share with the world?
Be unique, be different, be compassionate, and definitely don't try to be normal. Don't settle for the status quo.
That's great. That's actually really excellent advice. Yeah, there's definitely too much status quo out there. And that's why I love the indie movies and the indie projects and the indie theaters, supporting the indie theaters, because, again, I'm all about interesting, and it's always so much more interesting, generally.
Yeah, I mean, we may not always like what we see, you know, and we're the first ones to know that, you know, we might make a film that our friends and family may not enjoy. However, there was a reason we made it. We felt passionate about it, and we will always see it all the way through.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a message. It's a communication. It's an education.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing platform. Well, I hope to hear from you again soon after we all are able to see Watch the Sky and see what else. I'm sure you'll have a whole nother list of what you're working on then.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, so I really want to thank you so much for your time and for coming on. And we love everything you've done and can't wait to see more.
Thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Renee. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Find us at internationalwomeninfilm.com. Find Michelle at Michelle Trainer on Twitter, MICHELE Trainer. Or email IWIF@michellethetrainer.com. Find Michelle at michellethetrainer.com. That's MICHELE thetrainer.com. And visit Michelle's blog at engineeringwellness.com. Thank you all for listening.